This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A new honeybee lab may be opening soon at the University of Florida to support a burgeoning backyard industry of Sunshine State beekeepers. Later in the show, we'll talk with the doctor behind the push for this lab and some local beekeepers about research they hope to see happening there. But first, a total solar eclipse will take place this Monday. It'll be the first time in 38 years, so if you've forgotten what the experience was like last time, you now have a chance to see it again. Total solar eclipses have been happening for millennia, but human understanding of eclipses and their impact on us has made strides even since the last one. For example, hordes of people who want to watch the eclipse live were able to go online and order eclipse viewing glasses from Amazon, which didn't exist last time around. Actually, most of us just poked a hole in a piece of cardboard and thought we were good. To get the lowdown on how to safely view the eclipse on Monday, we talked with ophthalmologist Dr. Alexandra Conowal from Conowal Vision Center in Estero. What is it about a solar eclipse that can be damaging to people's eyes?
Well, you can develop solar retinopathy because basically, looking at the sun, your lens focuses all that light energy directly on your macula, kind of like if you use a magnifying glass and put it over a leaf and have the sun do the same kind of focusing and the light or the leaf burns. So the same kind of thing happens basically in your macula. So if you look directly at that sun, and we're actually more at risk here than people that live in that zone that they're going to have the total eclipse, because then you could look at it directly for those 2 minutes that the moon is blocking the sun. But for us, for that partial, that sun is still, you know, behind that moon in different places. So if you look right at it directly, it causes a burn to your macula. And the macula, if you get a burn there, it leaves basically like a blind spot in your vision. And if you do it for a second, sometimes, you know, 50% of people might get a little recovery from it. But in some people, it's permanent, and they'll always have a blind spot in their vision.
So, and it's different from just looking at the sun on a regular sunny day. How? Is it because we're fooled into thinking that it's not hurting our eyes because
exactly.
It's partially shaded?
Right, because it seems like it's dark outside or shaded, and so you think you could look directly at it. And most people don't look directly at the sun. But if you know, if you ever are driving and you have the sun going down and you look at it and then you'll close your eyes and you'll see the shape of the sun, it's the same sort of thing, except that it doesn't go away ever. You'll have that spot in your vision for the rest of your life, basically.
And so, and that can happen pretty quickly?
Yeah, I think probably if you look at it for, you know, even probably 10 seconds, yeah, I would think so. They say even quicker you can get a burn. It's like a laser. I've seen kids that had a laser light shine into their eyes for just a flash, and they get a burn. And some of those recover, and some of them don't. And it probably depends on how long and how young you are and that sort of thing, your macular health. So especially if you're an older person, you definitely shouldn't be looking at the eclipse.
Yeah, definitely
unless you have
not.
Special glasses.
Now tell me about these glasses. Everybody says they're readily available and they're inexpensive, but when you look for them, the only ones I can find are $9,900.
And you know what? They're not that readily available. In fact, they said that you could get them at Lowe's or at Walmart, but Judy at my office here actually called, and they said sold out already. And on Amazon, they have probably 50 different companies that sell them, and they say that a lot of them are fake, that they are not what you're looking for, that they have to have this ISO certification. It's called ISO 12312-2, and it should actually say that on the inside of the glasses. So there are a couple of companies that have these glasses that the NASA says are standardized for solar eclipses, made by APO, which is American Paper Optics. There's one made by Rainbow Symphony, one made by Thousand Oaks Optical. I don't know if you'll be able to get them by Monday, though.
Yeah, probably a little late.
Afternoon.
Yeah, right. It's a little late to do that now. But so if you do have glasses that you have ordered, it might not be a bad idea to take a look at them and see if it has that number.
Right, and then the other thing is, if you look through them, it should be completely black. And even if you hold them up to an LED light, you should not be able to see through it. So people that have prescription sunglasses or regular sunglasses, that does not work. And in fact, I think a lot of people think that they could take a picture with their iPhone or their smartphone, and that can actually ruin the sensor in your phone. So you really should have either a special lens and a camera if you're taking it, or get those glasses and put it in front of your iPhone, and also have those glasses on, because if you're looking up at it and, you know, you move your phone to make sure you're in the right place, you could still get a burn to your macula.
So that would be a $200 investment for a picture.
they're not supposed to be that expensive, but I think at this stage it's probably difficult to get them already.
So. Yeah, yeah. What about the thing that people talk about, putting a pinhole in a box or a piece of cardboard?
Yeah, that's another. That was something I think we did during the last eclipse 37 years ago.
Yeah, before Amazon.
Right, right, that you could actually make that sort of a device. And I'm not sure if they're doing that in the schools. I hear now that the schools aren't allowing kids to even go outside during the eclipse.
But, yeah, I know my daughter's school's not letting them go out.
Yeah, I guess Lee County schools are making them stay in school.
Yeah, it's not a good time to go out for recess.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether, you know, one other option is also welder's glasses. That also would work to block that.
A welder's helmet?
Mm-hmm, like a welder's helmet. Hmm. You want to invest in one of those.
Have you ever seen anybody come in that has this kind of burn?
No, you know what? I've only been practicing for 20 years, and the last eclipse was
37
years
ago. But, I mean, like you mentioned the one kid that has a laser. What does it hurt? Does it physically hurt?
No, your retina has no pain receptors, so you have no idea that you've done anything. And then probably a few hours later, just like this kid noticed that he wasn't seeing quite normally, and then actually by the next day, a couple days later, that spot that you noticed doesn't go away. And so the recovery, you know, it's... I don't know that they had all the equipment 37 years ago. They didn't, basically, to look at the macula and diagnose solar retinopathy. But I do see a lot of patients with macular degeneration here in Florida that I ask them, and they say, oh, maybe, possibly. I, you know, looked at it back, you know, whenever the last eclipse was, that have macular degeneration. So there's no way to know whether people will develop that, even if they have a mild burn and it goes away, whether they'll have a problem 20 years from now.
Yeah, so the safest bet is make sure you have the right glasses if you're going to look at it, or just don't look at it at all.
Or watch it on TV.
That was Dr. Alexandra Conowal from Conowal Vision Center in Estero. And to reiterate the specs that she gave on making sure that your eclipse viewing glasses are suitable, she mentioned to make sure that they have an ISO certification number, and that number is 12312-2 somewhere on them. Manufacturers of these are APO, American Paper Optics, Rainbow Symphony, and Thousand Oaks. So having covered how to keep your eyes safe when viewing the eclipse, let's turn now to the fun and exciting part and talk with Heather Preston with the Colusa Nature Center and Planetarium. She's in the studio with us now. Heather, can you hardly wait for this on Monday?
Yes, it's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to it immensely. I've never been under a total before.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I was under the last one the last time around, but I was very young and don't remember. I think I remember a box with a hole in it or something, or a little pinhole thing. So, but my eyesight thus far is still doing all right. We are talking about the upcoming total solar eclipse this Monday. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. So, Heather, tell me what the planetarium has planned for the total solar eclipse.
Well, for the total solar eclipse, we're doing something from about 12:30 on the day of, so on Monday, August 21st. 12:30, we'll have a planetarium full dome show about an eclipse, well, eclipses in general and the sun. And then after that, we will have a live demonstration. Our education coordinator, Walter Cheatham, will be up on stage in the planetarium doing physical demos of how eclipses happen, and at a level where the kids can really enjoy it too and get involved.
Which is pretty much the level you have to get it at for me to understand what's going on. I don't really think scientifically. So tell us, what is happening when an eclipse is going on?
Well, basically, the moon's orbit is inclined about 5 degrees to the Earth's orbit. So it's like two paper plates that are intersecting along a line. And that line is called the line of nodes. And if the moon happens to be either full or new when it is crossing that plane of the Earth's orbit around the sun, then you will get an eclipse. If the moon is full, you'll get a lunar eclipse. And if, because the moon passes through Earth's shadow. And if the moon is new, you'll get a solar eclipse.
So this is a new moon and it happens to be passing in between us and the sun.
Yes, in between the U.S. and the sun even.
So, I mean, compared to the sun, the moon's kind of small. So how can this little guy block out the sun for us?
Well, that's exactly why most of the country is going to see partial eclipse and not total eclipse. The actual part of the country that's going to be able to experience the moon completely blocking out the sun, it has to be, you know, obviously closer than the sun to do that. But it also is a very careful lineup. So there's only about 75 miles wide, this path of totality. And if you're outside of that, then you're going to see the moon blocking most of the sun, but not all of the sun. And if you get even farther out, like southwest Florida, you'll see the moon blocking 78% of the sun, but 22% of the sun's still going to be visible.
So it's kind of graded by how close you are to that one little line.
That one little spot right underneath, so that the moon is perfectly centered on the sun and it can block it out. That's called the umbra. Every place else that gets a partial coverage, you're in the penumbra, which is partial shadow. And then there are parts of the world, of course, which will never be in the penumbra during this eclipse.
So the people in like South America aren't going to notice anything.
Yeah, if it's far South America, they won't be able to see it because the moon will be beside the sun in their sky and the sun is just too bright.
So it's like this little narrow shadow just kind
of
falling
on. Just tiny little thing.
So a lunar eclipse differs in that it's this is a solar eclipse. The lunar eclipse differs in that it's at a time when there's a full moon and the Earth is casting its shadow on the moon.
And our shadow is way bigger.
Yeah.
So the moon basically enters our shadow from the west, goes across whatever part of our shadow it happens to be intersecting, and exits from the east hours later. And we're basically, when you watch a lunar eclipse, you can see it from anywhere on the night side of Earth. And you're watching the moon moving in its orbit, which is pretty cool.
I know. And you can watch that one. That one doesn't hurt your eyes.
No, no.
Because that's
of course
just
not.
A reflection
of
the sun's light. So what kind of things do scientists and researchers look for during an eclipse like this that they can't see otherwise?
Well, there are a couple of really special things that people talk about. One is being able to see the corona really clearly. You know, normally we use something called a coronagraph that blocks out the central image of the sun, and we study the corona with various types of instruments from space, et cetera, et cetera. We have a bunch of solar telescopes up in orbit that do that. But to be able to see it from the ground is a phenomenal situation. It's great with your naked eye.
Plus, you don't have to launch your equipment up into space
to
see
it. There's that too.
Yeah, this was probably a little bit easier. So what are you looking at the corona? What are we looking for?
The corona is different every time you see it. The corona is basically reflecting what magnetic conditions are on the sun at any given moment. And you know how there are sunspots and their groupings and they change and sometimes you get a flare or, you know, a solar prominence or things like that, coronal mass ejection. All of those things happen on dynamic timescales. You can actually watch them through a solar telescope evolving, changing in real time over a period of minutes. And so the corona is never quite the same. However many times you see it, it's never quite the same each time.
It's always moving.
It looks – and corona kind of, like hair coming out of the sun, billowing outward.
Yeah,
but it's streams of plasma.
Like Disney princess hair.
Yes,
kind
Disney
of flowing
princess
in the wind
flowing hair. Ariel maybe, the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking more Rapunzel. But then you can also maybe see like Mercury.
Yes.
A little bit easier?
Oh, yeah. When and Mars is on the far side of its orbit currently, so that'll be quite visible too.
Oh, wow.
So kind of close to the sun in the sky for normal observation, but perfectly okay during totality. The other thing that happens during totality that is really cool, and I've got to talk about it, it's a test of general relativity. Einstein came out with his theory of general relativity in 1915, and the very next solar eclipse, total solar eclipse, that Arthur Eddington could get himself to was 1919. And before the eclipse, you know, 6 months before, they took images of the sky that got a pattern of bright stars that were going to be behind the sun 6 months later because, of course, it takes us a year to go all the way around the sun. And so where the sun is in the sky changes over a 6 month period from, you know, midnight to noon. Anyway, they therefore went back during the eclipse and they took images and they could get some of the pattern of the bright stars that they had already measured the positions of, and they were able to see how the starlight shifted a little bit outward, indicating the mass of the sun. It was a direct measurement of the mass of the sun, but it was also a direct proof of general relativity, which is pretty cool.
So what they did was they mapped out where the stars are, and
already,
then they looked at them again when they were
when the sun was in front, yes, and being
it.
Blocked, yeah.
And so then
the starlight comes from behind it, and it curves.
So they were able to see how that light was impacted by the massive sun.
Yes, yes. pretty cool, huh?
So they were able to prove it.
Yeah.
You usually don't get proof of scientific theories that quickly.
Well, no. That was pretty special.
That was a pretty awesome moment.
Great sensation. Yeah.
And then, you know, current scientists can probably look at these stars and then be able to look at the differences in them over this period of time since we've been investigating these things.
Yeah. Yeah. They can do that, too. I think there are a lot of people who are getting into this kind of research who haven't been doing much with eclipses before, but now it's becoming – and this is a very good, well-positioned one. I know some wildlife biologists who are going out to the path of totality to study what the animals actually do under the circumstances of the eclipse, because everybody talks about the fact that, you know, the crickets start chirping and the frogs start croaking and the bats start flying and the birds roost and all that kind of thing. Even though it's only a two-minute totality, they want to study what exactly – what types of responses these animals are having and whether it messes them up or whether it's a momentary glitch or what's going on.
Well, and there's also – they're asking citizens to kind of do citizen science on this too and input their things. There's the California Academy of Sciences Life Responds Project is allowing users to contribute their observations of animals and plants during the eclipse through an app that they have. So we're going to put a connection to that on our Twitter feed, and that is at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. You can find that pretty easily there. So we have a link to that California Academy of Sciences Life Response Project where you can input your observations of what nature's doing so that can help.
That is awesome.
Inform that kind of a project. I mean, it's just so interesting. We are talking about Monday's solar eclipse. So what are your plans? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Are you making the drive to get into the path of totality, solar, what, eclipse totality is what it's called?
Path of totality.
Path of total totality. It's, yeah, that's
doesn't
it.
That sound like a band name? The Path of Totality.
It does. It really does. And when things like this happen, I can't help but wonder what people thought was happening before science. You know, back when we thought that the Earth was flat and there were myths and superstitions. According to NASA, the first known written records of people paying attention to eclipses are from around 5,000 years ago. But they came up with a lot of different things that they thought might be going on up there.
Yes. There is a story of two armies that had met for a battle. And as they began their battle, the sun began to be eclipsed. And the eclipse progressed and it got darker and darker. And by the time it reached totality, both armies were terrified and decided that it was a sign that they should not fight. And so they immediately agreed to peace and they went their separate ways. Now, if they just waited a few more hours, they could have started fighting again. But I think this was a good effect of an eclipse.
Or maybe they felt like they made peace and so therefore the sun came back.
That's right. That's probably what happened.
Wouldn't that be cool if that could happen again?
And yes, I've heard stories of the dragon swallowing the sun. And you, I think, earlier mentioned something from Norse mythology.
Norse mythology, they have this celestial wolf being that is eating the sun. And in a lot of different cultures, even in the Far East, there's always something eating the sun. But if you think about it, it kind of looks like something's taking a bite out of it.
Yes, there is that,
because it
that
looks like a
crescent shape. That's right.
It looks like somebody's nibbling on it. Mm-hmm. And there are still superstitions around. In India, people fast because it's believed that food prepared during an eclipse is not going to be any good or is possibly going to be poisoned. But in Italy, they believe that flowers planted during an eclipse will grow to be the brightest and most beautiful.
That's a nice side effect.
That would be a nicer. A lot of it's doomsday, but then some of them are happy.
But people get nervous about change, and especially change in something as fundamental as sunlight. It is an eerie feeling, and I've heard my friend Glenn Schneider, who used to work in the same place as I did at Space Telescope Science Institute, is an eclipse chaser, and he talked about the fact that it made the hackles, you know, the hairs on the back of his neck rise the first time he experienced it, and he was just petrified. He not by fear or anything, but just by shock and wonder and awe. He had had all these plans for photographs he was going to take and measurements, and he didn't do any of it. He just stood there staring at it.
Actually experiencing something?
Yes, yeah.
I don't think we do that very much anymore anyway. We're always trying to get a picture of stuff on our iPhones, you know? And it's interesting that it could damage photographic equipment.
Oh,
some
yeah.
of these
Because these things are not made to look directly at the sun. And if you have it looking directly at the sun for a long period of time, there's a good chance you're going to burn out the CCD in your phone. You got to be careful about that.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend using some form of filtering, even if you're using your cell phone for it.
Yeah, the doctor mentioned, Dr. Conowal mentioned putting your glasses in front of the lens of your phone and then also keeping yours on just in case you get out, your phone gets out of the path so you don't end up burning your eyes. It's amazing how dangerous that can be. But, and
yeah.
then it can you can be fooled into thinking it's okay to look at it because it doesn't hurt when you're burning it.
And the damage doesn't show up immediately, which is the weird part. You know how sometimes when you get you see something too bright, you have after effect on, you know, after images on your eyes, but then it goes away after a while? The problem with this is that your eyes will work for a while afterwards, but the next morning you wake up and you got a blind spot. And that's no good. And so we've got to be careful not to do that. And I highly recommend if you've got kids and you don't have eclipse glasses for everybody, that you use projection instead. That is far, far safer. And NASA has a handout that tells you how to observe the sun safely. They also have a website, eclipse2017.nasa.gov, that includes links to sun safety and how to do projection, how to make a box that will project the image of the sun. You can basically put it over your head, or you can make an even bigger one and share it with your family.
And that's not putting a pinhole in the box and looking through that pinhole.
No, you never look through the pinhole. You use the pinhole as a camera. Basically, a pinhole is going to function almost like a lens. And the farther from the projected surface you get, the better and bigger the image you'll see, but you have to cut down on scattered light coming in from the sides or the image will be very faded. So keep the sides blocked. Make sure that you've got a nice long projection distance. And from the pinhole to the screen on which you're projecting or white paper or whatever, it needs to be perpendicular and flat. And you will see an image of the sun, even with sunspots, prominences, everything. It's amazing. And it might be 2 inches across if you've got a 5-foot throw on your pinhole. You don't look through the pinhole.
No. Okay.
You use it to project.
It's been a while, so
it works.
I kind of forgot how those boxes worked.
It's called camera oscura, and it's a very old technique, but it works. It works.
I think great. I remember reading about that in the Renaissance period.
Mm-hmm.
So is that how you're going to be able to view this at the Calusa Nature Center and Planetarium?
That's one of the ways that we're planning on making available. We have a very limited number of eclipse glasses that we will share out among family groups because you don't want to be staring at the thing the entire time. It's like 4 hours.
Yeah, it's a
Please.
Long time.
Please get real. Don't stand out in the sun for 4 hours in Southwest Florida.
Yeah.
But the other thing is at 3 o'clock, we're going to have another show called Solar Superstorms, which should be fun, which is basically a movie projected in the planetarium. So people will be able to go into the planetarium for cooling breaks. And after the maximum, they can come in and then go out and check it again 20 minutes later and see how far along it's moved. We'll have telescopes that are specially filtered to look at the sun. We have one that we always use called the Coronado PST, and we use that every Friday for solar observing, including today we did it from up until noon. And that has a filter that takes out almost all of the light, but you can see the sun very clearly. Nice large image. It's orange, kind of has a dapple to it because of the tops of the convective cells. And there's going to be another telescope out run by another member of Southwest Florida Astronomical Society who's bringing his own solar telescopes.
Well,
so
nice.
We're going to try to make sure that everybody gets at least one chance to peek through the telescope at the moon's disk infringing on the sun's disk.
I don't know if you would know this, but have those telescopes been around for a while?
Oh, yeah. Solar filters have been around a long time, but the technology is getting better and better.
I just can't imagine how much different the technology is just this time as regards to just the last time that it was available in our era. I mean, just talking about in the United States, 38 years ago?
That's right. Do you remember when people used to use camera film for everything? They didn't take cell phone pictures?
Oh, my first pictures were developed in a dark room.
Do you remember how they told you to use exposed film negatives to look through this?
That I don't remember.
To see the sun at an eclipse. That was 1979. I remember being told, oh, use exposed film, you know, the negatives, the black part,
really?
That works great. It doesn't.
So how's your eyesight these days?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I wasn't under the path of totality
okay.
for that eclipse. I've never been in a total, and it's going to be exciting.
Well, with social media, which is new, definitely that's new mm-hmm. since the last time we had one, we're going to have some coverage from this from a million different perspectives.
That's right.
It's going to be incredible. The Globe Observer, for example, is a mobile app you can use to photograph clouds and record sky observations before, during, and after the eclipse,
excellent.
Which will later be compared with NASA's own satellite images. So we are putting a link to that also on our Twitter feed at WGCU using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And also, Google and UC Berkeley are asking for images from all points of the eclipse path to make a high-definition, time-expanded video of the entire event called the Eclipse Mega Movie 2017. So there are a lot of ways that people can get involved in reporting back what they're finding, where they're at.
Absolutely. And that is great. And you can do that even from here because they want to see the partial ones as well as the totality ones. The other thing I should mention at this point is that I'm not going to be there. This is entirely being conducted.
Are you going to the path?
I am going to the path.
I was wondering how you were resisting the urge.
No, I'm not resisting the urge. We've had these plans in place since 1999. There is an eclipse conclave. I used to work at Space Sciences Lab, Berkeley, and there's basically a bunch of Berkeley scientists got together and said, when's the next total solar eclipse go across the U.S.? Let's reserve a block of rooms and have a conference that coincides with the eclipse. So that's what they're doing. And I'm headed there.
Do you think you're going to be able to focus on recording any data, or are you just going to stay and experience it?
I think I'm going to experience it because there are enough people taking data all over the world. They don't need my eyeballs for that. And I want to actually, yes, it's a time to be in the moment.
I can't wait to hear how it feels, what it's like. Do report back.
I will be happy to.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Heather Preston with the Calusa Nature Center and Planetarium. As always, it's a pleasure visiting with you. We have links on our website at WGCUnews.org to the calendar of events happening Monday at the planetarium, so click on those links to find out more information and find out how to get there. Coming up, honeybees bring more than the occasional sting. They're an integral part of the global ecosystem, and there's a new lab that aims to research all that these little workers have to offer. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.